Metro Manila mayors seeking a more flexible modified lockdown. They've also agreed to shorten the curfew hours in the metro. The Philippines imposes a travel ban on India, which is reeling from its latest COVID-19 surge. We'll speak with Manila's ambassador to India, Ramon Bagat Singh Jr., about the situation there. The U.S. eases its mask guidelines for those who have been fully vaccinated. And European scientists reporting a large gap between the amount of climate warming emissions reported by countries and the amount that's actually found in the atmosphere. Later, we'll be joined by Finance Assistant Secretary Paula Alvarez on Manila's target of reducing carbon emissions by year 2030. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Metro Manila mayors in favor of an extension of the modified lockdown, but with more flexibility. Metro Manila Development Authority Chairman Benher Abalo says mayors have agreed that the MECQ needs to be extended to curb the surge in COVID-19 infections, but they want business activities increased. The mayors also agreed to shorten the curfew in Metro Manila to 10 in the evening until 4 in the morning, beginning May 1st. The MECQ is set to expire at the end of the month.
Takot ang mga doktor na magkaroon ng infeksyon at dumami pa ito. No? On the other hand naman, maraming nagugutom at maraming walang trabaho. The middle ground is having the same MECQ but more businesses and more activities. So under this what we could call as MECQ flex, at least yung border controls ng Rizal, Bulacan, Laguna, Cavite, nandiyan pa rin. Hindi kagad tayo mag-transition ng mabilis.
On Tuesday, more than 7,000 new COVID-19 cases were confirmed in the Philippines. That brings the total number of active cases to over 71,000. But health officials note 22 laboratories did not submit their data. 63 new deaths and over 10,000 recoveries were also recorded. The country's COVID-19 treatment chief is backing the recommendation of some Metro Manila mayors to extend the MECQ in the National Capital Region and its surrounding areas. Health Undersecretary Leopoldo Vega says the country needs to preserve the little gains made in terms of healthcare capacity first before easing the restrictions.
If you take a look at the number of cases, there might be a decrease and even a plateauing, but we have to make sure that we have to be ready for anything that will come. The gains that we have came in later, about the fourth or the third and the fourth and the fifth week. So it's much better that we have this kind of status right now.
The Philippine government will temporarily ban the entry of all travelers from India. This as the second most populous nation in the world struggles to contain a spike in COVID-19 cases. That travel ban will take effect from April 29th until May 14th.
Yung mga restrictions po para sa mga iba pang biyahero na galing sa mga ibang bansa na meron na rin pong variant na galing po sa India ay pwede pong ma-impose ng Office of the President upon the joint recommendation po ng Department of Health at ng Department of Foreign Affairs.
The variant found in India has been tagged a double mutant because of the presence of two notable mutations in the spike protein of the virus. Now, these mutations are said to allow the virus to easily enter the human body and then multiply faster. The World Health Organization says that COVID variant has been detected in at least 17 countries so far. A graphic description of the current COVID-19 situation in India, a Filipina living there called it the very worst. Victoria Singh lives in New Delhi, and she says dead bodies of those who died from the virus are piling up in crematories. Hospitals are operating beyond capacity as beds and oxygen tanks are running out. Singh was a friend of one of the two Filipinos who died from COVID-19 in India. She says she was surprised how fast her friend died just days after testing positive from the virus.
Government also, they're trying control, but still is spreading. It's increasing, you know, and lots of people are dying and still they're still in hospital. Actually, I don't want to watch news now, because if I see, you know, I get hurt, you know what I see. And sometimes people, when they die, you know, they don't have place to cremate. So they just put on the road and then they just do their tradition, how to, you know, they pray and all these things. Sometimes they don't get the wood also, how to. So they get the cut the tree and they just put that one and fire them. You know, it's very worse.
And let's talk now to the Philippine Ambassador to India, Ramon Bagat Singh Jr. Ambassador Bagat Singh, good afternoon from Manila, and thank you for joining us today.
And thank you for this invitation.
How are you? How are you doing?
Well, thanks for that question. So far, so good. We're locked down. The Delhi government issued a lockdown 2 weeks ago, so everything is practically closed here. And we had to close the embassy, and everybody's on a work from home basis. We just have to be very sure that everybody's secure.
Right. How many personnel do you have there? How many staff members do you have at the embassy?
Yeah, we have 16 Filipinos here and about 10 local employees who take care of the embassy premises.
And so far, all of them are okay? Their health status?
We're praying that everybody is okay, and we make sure that all the provisions that they need are in place and we're taking care of everybody.
Ambassador, how would you describe the situation there in India as we speak? We just heard from a Filipino there in New Delhi. What about your perception of what is happening there? Tell us, how would you describe it?
Well, as what Prime Minister Modi said, this is a storm surge. No? It's something like a tsunami. From November to January, everything was manageable and controllable. They had 10,000 cases every day, and deaths would be about 300, 400. And then I guess something happened starting March and April, as what you stated. This double mutant variant just took everybody by surprise. It's deadly, it's contagious, it's highly transmissible, and it's just sad that from 50,000 to 100,000 to 200,000 to 300,000, and in 3 days, we had 1 million cases. So everybody, I guess, was just taken aback. Mm-hmm. And it is attributable to two factors, they say, biological and behavioral. Biological, nobody expected this kind of mutant to be this strong. And the people's body here were not ready to take this kind of strain. Behavioral, people are wondering because they have all these religious, political, social gatherings from November up to January, February this year, but we never saw a spike. Mm-hmm. So I guess this is more attributable to the biological factor and the very nature of this double mutant strain. But so far, the government is managing well. They were taken by surprise, but they have coped up, and slowly they've increased the number of hospital beds. They have allowed the entry of oxygen donated by other countries, and they have rolled out oxygens, converted oxygen factories from industrial use to commercial and human use. So I believe that they will be able to recover in a week's time. Now, as to the spike, another story.
Yeah, in 1 week's time, that's, you know, some would say that's a tall order because of the massive infections that India is experiencing right now. I just want to go back to what you said a while ago. You said that you think Narendra Modi's government is managing well. I would just like to know, how can you say that, considering that in some news reports, the people have spoken and they're saying it seems like government has let them down and has forgotten all about them, Ambassador?
Yeah, that is a valid point of view. As I said, no matter how ready you are, no matter how you think prepared you are, you can never expect this kind of tsunami. They had more than 1,000 hospital beds prepared last year, and they were wrapping up. They were closing it already because they thought that they were able to contain this pandemic. So nobody expected this. And in spite of the difficulties and the shortcomings that you see and watch on TV right now, there is this feeling that under these dire circumstances, at least this government is regrouping, and with the help of the private sector, they are providing all the necessary equipment to meet this shortage right now. Of course, it's really sad when you see all these funeral pyres in the crematoriums. You know, it's really, really sad. They are overworked. From a regular service of, let's say, 8 to 10 deceased people every day in these crematoriums, they now have 50 to 70. So it's really sad that they are converting parking lots into crematorium sites. So those are the very graphic pictures that we see. But we hope that in the near future, this can be resolved.
Yeah, Ambassador, when you first stepped foot there in India, this is far from, far from your thought, far from, ever happening in your imagination. And to see this happening now in your second home, how does that make you feel, Ambassador?
As I said, it's sad, it's depressing, but at the same time, it's a challenge, you know. We were fortunate to have had 8 months without COVID here. We got to see, you know, India's a subcontinent. It's a beautiful place. There's so much history. There's so much Asian civilization. There's so much to learn. There's yoga, Ayurveda, etc. And the people are fantastic people. And then after 8 months, I've spent more than a year now here under COVID circumstances. And you see the resiliency. That's what's important. You see the resiliency, no matter what. Because I have seen, even during these COVID times, they have rallies, they have political activities, and yet the people, they set aside this fear, this threat of COVID. And because of their religion, they leave it up to God. You know, maybe that's another feature here that they have to address. The difficulty sometimes of adhering to scientific medical recommendations, to behave, to practice protocols, you know. This is a factor that they have to consider. But I wouldn't trade places right now anywhere in the world, because we have a chance to help our fellow men. We're very fortunate that we have very few Filipinos here, only about a maximum of 3,000. And they have been very, very cooperative, very helpful. We've heard Vicky Singh. She's one of the active members of the Filipino community here. And they have been helping out, you know, all the temporary Filipino visitors who are here, those that are in the hospitals, those other professionals. So the Bayanihan spirit is very strong. So in spite of us being on lockdown and the embassy being closed, we managed to coordinate and work things out with the Filipino community.
Ambassador, out of the 3,000 Filipinos there, how many have been infected with COVID-19?
We get information through social media and through the Philcom network. So far, we have had about 20, at least 20 right now. And we hope the numbers don't increase. But they're okay. That's the point. They're not as serious as the others who passed away, who left us. No? So these 20 plus are okay.
Well, the Philippine government just announced that it will be temporarily banning travelers from India. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, Carmina, there is actually a de facto travel ban. Because
already?
Other countries have banned travel from India. If you want to go, number one, there's no direct flight from India to the Philippines. Number two, if you want to travel from India to the Philippines, you have to take these transit routes. You know, you have to connect either from the UAE or Hong Kong and other countries. And these countries have issued a travel ban. So, in effect, it is de facto Indians cannot visit the Philippines. But it's a good sign. I hope our Indian friends will understand this. This is not personal. We just really need them. They are a very strategic partner for the Philippines. They are helping us get vaccines and medicines, remdesivir, etc. And there's a big Indian community there. So this is just a pause, a time out for them to travel to the Philippines. It's not stopping the Indians. It's stopping the virus from spreading. It's stopping this deadly double mutant variant from spreading anywhere else in the world.
talking about the pharmaceutical side of it, Ambassador, do you have any word as to, you know, when India will begin exporting again the remdesivir, the vaccines as well? Because as I understand it, they're going to have to take care of their own first to be able to contain the surge in India before they can start exporting again.
Well, you know, India is the vaccine capital of the world. You know, Serum Institute of India manufactures at least 60% of the vaccines throughout the world. And when Secretary Galvez came here last month, he was able to finalize a deal which would import 30 million doses of a product that Serum Institute will manufacture, which is a tie-up with Novavax. Of the U.S., and the brand name is called Covavax. The scheduled delivery there, I hope everything falls into place, they get all the regulatory approvals, is September. So that's Covavax with Serum Institute. On the other side, we have a pending application right now there in the Philippines with the Covaxin. This is with Bharat Biotech. The manufacturer is Bharat Biotech. Some private sector, this is a tripartite deal with, among LGUs there, private sector, Godigosio of Jovi Concepcion, and the supplier manufacturer. They would import about 8 million doses to the Philippines, hopefully by the end of May.
And so far, no word yet as to, you know, if they're going to have to rein that in for a bit because of the situation there in India?
Well, the government did not issue a ban, export ban on vaccines. They issued an export ban for remdesivir, but not for vaccines. Mm-hmm. And this is the, you know, interesting part here, how open Indian government is. No? They have enough vaccines, and yet they allowed Sputnik of Russia to come in. And it took, they fast-tracked the regulatory requirements approval in 3 days, if it was approved. So just to show to the people here that even if we have enough vaccines for our citizens, we allow other countries also to provide the vaccines for our people. But so far, they've vaccinated about 150 million here. And they have enough. The government even lent money to the manufacturers to double their production. So I don't think it will have a negative impact on their plans to export vaccines to the Philippines in the near future. It's just a matter of our government agencies giving the necessary approvals at the right time.
You know, Ambassador, while you were speaking, I can't help but, you know, note the irony there that this is happening in the vaccine capital of the world. It's just, as you put it, it's numbing, it's mind-blowing that this is happening right there in India.
It is, you know, we're in a quagmire here. They have vaccines, they're giving it affordable, free, and yet people are still going to the hospitals and getting sick. So,
and dying.
And dying. So does the vaccine roll out not in tune or keeping pace with the cases cropping up? We don't know. I just hope that they be more circumspect and be how would you say, just be more careful in their movements here. That's why lockdowns and staying home and just staying put is very, very important. Just for one's sake, you know, just to be careful.
Yeah. The embassy, let's go back to that. It's going to be closed until May 17 because of the surge. How will it then be able to ensure that Filipinos are taken care of there if ever they need assistance, if the embassy will remain closed?
Well, the embassy remains closed only for purposes of providing service for passport renewals and visa applications of Indians and foreigners. So thanks to social media, we have a Facebook. They communicate with us. We just tell them, we can do everything online. Let's do it online. If not, can you please bear with us? We have and wait until May 17, no?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's also dangerous for them to be moving around. It's also,
right.
They have to be very, very careful in going out. If they're coming from one or two other different states, they have to take the train, public transport. They're exposed. So it's for their sake also that they stay put and we put a pause on our services here. Now, in terms of servicing the Filipino community, where we are daily in contact and strong coordination with the Filipino community. So we have chat groups, we have WhatsApp, etc. And that's how we communicate with them. And that's how we help each other. We have a support group with the Philco.
That's good to know. By the way, are there any Filipino tourists who are stuck there in India?
Well, you know, last year we were able to repatriate about 1,000 Filipinos, and some of them were tourists. So we were able to send them home last year. So okay. Those who are staying here, I guess, opted to stay. Okay, but right now we have a lot of emails asking for repatriation plans or flights from India to the Philippines. And we're working on that. But as I said, unfortunately, most of the airlines have put a travel ban of people traveling out of India. So everything is on hold. We cannot just fight the travel the agencies and the airlines and say, come on, give us a flight out of India. So that's the sad news there. We cannot impose travel plans for stranded Filipinos here.
Okay, so they're going to have to stay there. They're going to have to wait it out. By the way, you were talking about, you know, an opportunity as well for Filipinos to help India in regarding the situation there. Now, has India sought the assistance of the Philippines in dealing with the pandemic? Maybe ask for the deployment of Filipino healthcare workers there?
Well, not really, no. They have some of the finest healthcare service workers in the world. They're very proud of their doctors, their nurses, and the medical schools here. And you know very well, Carmina, even the United States, they have outstanding medical people. Mm-hmm. So they have that. Our president has probably sent already a letter of support and solidarity to Prime Minister Modi. And I'm sure that our government is thinking of some other ways to show our support for the Indian government and the Indian people. But they have been deluged by support coming from other countries for oxygen concentrators and the like. Other than that, I think it's more of prayers and support and that the Indian people need, you know.
Okay, finally, Ambassador, as you wrap up this interview, I want to get your thoughts on what the Philippines can learn from the India experience.
Well, learn from their resiliency. Well, unfortunately, we can say these are mistakes or shortcomings that have happened, that we can take a second look at that and make sure that it doesn't happen. This second wave is a total devastation and really deplorable. So if ever we have to learn something from what's happening right now, it's how to prepare for a second wave, how to prepare for a tsunami. Because they've had these medical kits, they've had this test, trace, and treat. They've had this preparation for a vaccine rollout as early as last year. So they have all these programs, plans, policies that I submitted to the DFA as to how India is handling not just the COVID crisis, but even the vaccination rollout. So just take a look at it. And we're very proud, Carmina, that the WHO head here in India is a Filipino, Dr. Ofrin. So all we have to do is call him up and ask for his advice and guidance and lessons learned on what is happening here in India. And there is a concept paper, Andang Pilipinas, okay, that we will, if ever it is needed, provide this information to our agencies concerned there. So we hope we can be okay.
Well, Ambassador, thank you for joining us today. We were talking before we went on air, and I will reiterate it again. You keep safe. You take care. And just, you know, as you said, a lot of prayers coming your way as we speak. Thanks again, India Ambassador Ramon Bagatsing Jr., for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you. At marami salamat po. Good morning. Good day.
All right. From there, we're going to focus now on Nepal. Healthcare workers there are grappling with a rapid spike in COVID-19 cases. Experts fear thousands caught the more infectious mutant strains of the virus from neighboring India. Here's the full story.
Over the border from India, Nepal is struggling to contain a rapid rise of COVID-19 cases. The Himalayan state reported over 3,000 new infections on Sunday, the highest daily surge recorded this year. Experts fear that more infectious mutant strains emerging out of India are spreading across Nepal. Vijaya Adhikara's husband is struggling to breathe, but despite being at the hospital, they're struggling to get help. In the capital, Kathmandu, the hospitals are feeling the strain.
We brought him to the hospital in an ambulance as he was facing breathing difficulties. The doctors haven't attended to him. Everyone is busy.
Nepal launched its vaccination campaign in January and gave shots to 1.9 million people. They were all provided by India and China. But health experts fear that the vaccines are running out after officials failed to get hold of more vaccine from India or any other source. Over 90 developing nations, including Nepal, rely on India for the doses to protect their own populations. But India has now prioritised its own need, as a second wave of the epidemic there has run out of control. A public health expert warns that if the trend continued for a week in Nepal, then new patients will be unable to find any beds, with one local doctor saying the country risks becoming a mini India.
Well, back here at home, two Philippine lawmakers announced plans to distribute free samples of the anti-parasitic drug ivermectin as treatment for COVID-19. Deputy Speaker Rodante Marcoleta and Anak Kalusugan Party List Representative Mike Defensor will hold an event in Quezon City on Thursday, along with doctors who will prescribe the controversial drug. But Coronavirus Treatment Chief and Health Undersecretary Leopoldo Vega asserts the congressman must first secure a compassionate use permit from the Food and Drug Administration.
Ivermectin is still an investigational and really an experimental drug. In other words, it is not fit for any kind of human consumption. We don't know if this will be beneficial or it can be harmful to the constituents. So the stand of the WHO, the stand of the FDA and the DOH is that it has to pass through the FDA for permit and for regulation.
Ivermectin is only approved for use on animals in the Philippines, but the FDA earlier granted special permits to several hospitals to use it for their COVID-19 patients. The arrival of 15,000 doses of the Sputnik V vaccine in the Philippines delayed. Palace spokesman Harriet Roque explains that logistical challenges caused the setback. The Russian-made vaccines were supposed to be delivered today. There are reports the delivery could still take place over the weekend. Brazil's health regulator Anvisa rejects the importation of the Sputnik V vaccine. The health body voted against the drug after technical staff cited a lack of information guaranteeing its safety and efficacy. A crucial issue for the agency is the presence of replicating adenoviruses in the vaccine, which it calls a serious breach. But the Russian Direct Investment Fund, which markets Sputnik V abroad, rejects those comments. It cites the regulatory approval it has already received in 61 countries. Brazil's vaccination program is being plagued by delays and procurement failures, while its national healthcare system is on the brink of collapse. The U.S. eases its mask guidelines for Americans outdoors. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says fully vaccinated people can now dine without masks outdoors or at outdoor restaurants with others from multiple households. They can also attend small outdoor gatherings with a mixture of fully vaccinated and unvaccinated people. But the CDC recommends wearing masks when attending crowded outdoor activities like sports events and parades, as well as visits to indoor places like malls and places of worship.
Generally, for vaccinated people, outdoor activities without a mask are safe. However, we continue to recommend masking in crowded outdoor settings and venues, such as packed stadiums and concerts, where there is decreased ability to maintain physical distance and where many unvaccinated people may also be present.
If you're vaccinated, you can do more things more safely, both outdoors as well as indoors. For those who haven't gotten their vaccination yet, especially if you're younger or think you don't need it, This is another great reason to go get vaccinated. Now. Now. While we still have a long way to go in this fight and a lot of work to do in May and June to get us to July 4th, we've made stunning progress because of all of you, the American people.
New COVID-19 cases have dropped 16% over the past week in the U.S., where over 140 million people have received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. That's the biggest percentage drop in weekly new cases since February, according to Reuters. Europe plans to launch a digital health pass in June to save the summer holiday season from the pandemic. But as this report tells us, member states are trying to hurdle several roadblocks to the scheme.
Health passports. Few topics in the COVID-19 era stoke more debate. Many leaders see them as a key to normality, but others just see a door to discrimination.
I say scrap it and let's just get on with life again. Stop trying to control the people.
The best case study to see the tensions at play is the European Union, which has proposed the Digital Green Certificate to help revive a tourism industry on its knees, after southern states warned their economies can't withstand another summer of deserted beaches. But developers are facing a host of issues, ranging from the practical to the philosophical and moral. The EU-wide pass is slated to launch in June and will allow travellers to cross borders freely again if they have been vaccinated, tested negative, or recovered from COVID-19. The pass would be issued by a doctor or health centre and feature a QR code that can be scanned into a smartphone app, giving people a portable proof of immunity in their pocket. There isn't going to be one pan-European app. The 27 member states are each creating their own. Estonia is considered to be the furthest along, but others aren't far behind. France is already testing its app for airline flights. Alongside Germany, it's planning to add to or build upon its pre-existing contact tracing app. The European Commission plans to issue a contract for a central gateway, making it possible for all the separate national apps to talk to each other. That would assure that, say, the German app could easily be read in Portugal. If you think it all sounds pretty complicated, that's because it is, and there are many issues being wrestled with. For one, there is a big question mark over whether vaccines or past infection really do lead to immunity. The WHO has spoken out numerous times against the scheme for this very reason.
At this stage, we would not like to see vaccination as the vaccination passport as a requirement for entry or exit, because we're not certain that at this stage that the vaccine prevents transmission, and there are all those other questions, apart from the question of discrimination against people who are not able to have the vaccine for one reason or another.
That second point mentioned, discrimination, is another big concern being voiced on streets across Europe.
There are many of us who don't want to get vaccinated because we don't trust these vaccines. If they were vaccines like those for tetanus or chickenpox, then yes. But I don't trust such a new vaccine. But I don't have to be locked in my house and be discriminated like other people who haven't been vaccinated.
The EU has already promised to open its doors to vaccinated Americans this summer. However, no global standard has yet been agreed, meaning work still needs to be done to deal with overseas visitors in Europe. Member states also worry about the security of personal information and if the scheme would be vulnerable to fraud. Concerns about digital tracking too loom large. The European Commission has promised the health passes will contain minimal data. Anything sensitive will typically be stored locally on smartphones, while the EU gateway will only handle the signatures on digital certificates.
We're going to take a break now. Coming up, Manila pushes back against Beijing's claim of sovereignty in the West Philippine Sea. And later, we'll also talk to the finance department about the Philippines' efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Stay with us here. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. And we're back. There's still a Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Metro Manila mayors seeking a more flexible modified lockdown. They've also agreed to shorten the curfew hours in the metro. The Philippines imposes a travel ban on India, which is reeling from its latest COVID-19 surge. Manila's ambassador to New Delhi does not expect the situation will affect India's delivery of vaccines to the Philippines. The U.S. eases its mask guidelines for those who have been fully vaccinated. And a European scientist reporting a large gap between the amount of climate warming emissions reported by countries and the amount that's actually found in the atmosphere. An opportunity of the century, that's how European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen described the European Union's 750 billion euro or $906 billion plan to rebuild a greener and more digital economy post-pandemic. The EU scheme requires governments to spend 37% of the money they get on reducing carbon dioxide emissions in their economies and 20% on digitalizing them.
We want to build a green Europe which protects our climate and our environment and which creates sustainable jobs. We want to invest in a digital Europe, innovative and competitive in global markets. And we want a resilient Europe, which is better prepared to face future crises. The Commission will ensure that these plans reflect our high level of ambition.
During its presentation, Italy said it will invest in improving its fragile infrastructure, boosting environmentally sustainable development, and providing more support to women and young people who have disproportionately lost out during the pandemic. France and Germany, meanwhile, laid out plans for billions in spending to fight climate change and boost the use of digital technology across their economies. U.S. President Joe Biden has vowed to cut U.S. greenhouse gas emissions by at least 50%. That's more than double its commitment under the 2015 Paris Climate Accord. And in a climate summit he recently called, many countries followed suit, varying their plans to reduce emissions, including the Philippines. In that summit, Philippine Finance Secretary Carlos Dominguez declared the Philippines wants to become a leader in cutting greenhouse gas emissions. The aim, reduce Manila's carbon emissions by year 2030. Let's talk more about this. Joining us now, Assistant Secretary Paula Alvarez, she's spokesperson of the Department of Finance. Assistant Secretary Alvarez, good afternoon to you and thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Carmina. Good afternoon.
All right. First off, many people are thinking about this, and we want to hear it from you. Why is the matter of climate change a matter of finance?
Yes. Okay, that's a very good question. I think it's not really known to everyone, but the Philippines only accounts for 0.3% of global carbon emission. That's very small for a country as big as the Philippines. So, however, even if we only account for such a small carbon emission, we bear the brunt of the effects of climate change. We all know that every year we have successive typhoons, and the Philippines actually has around 20 typhoons every year, and this is on top of the changing weather pattern. So this affects our economy a lot. It gives us damages in terms of infrastructure. It has effects in terms of damages in terms of economic development. Year on year, our inflation is also affected because, for example, in 2020 alone, from October to November, we had at least three back-to-back super typhoons, and this affected our rice-producing provinces. Aside from that, our warming oceans is heavily affecting food in terms of fisheries, in terms of crops. So it really affects us in a macroeconomic level. That's why it is now a matter of finance.
Now on to the goal of reducing Manila's emissions by 75% by year 2030. How is this not ambitious?
Okay, it's actually very ambitious. We are one of the more ambitious countries. But however, what we want to emphasize is that we didn't come up with this over thin air. So the 75% mitigation in terms of carbon emission, 72% of it is actually conditional. What this means is that each of the sectors that we are supposed to lower our carbon emission needs support internationally in terms of, for example, technology, finance, and technical assistance in capacity building. So what this means is we're not really, in terms of a huge mitigation of carbon emissions, we're not really claiming to mitigate. What we're trying to do is to adapt. But at the same time, adaptation is a function of mitigation. So an example of this is, for example, how the agriculture sector is. So we want our agriculture sector to be more climate resilient. Our typhoon season has actually moved. So now we're still experiencing typhoons until December. So that's from June to December of typhoons, where previously in the past years or in the past decade, we only have typhoons from June to around September or August. So our harvesting and planting season is heavily affected. So how do you help your farmers become more climate resilient? You can't expect the DA to do this on their own. It's a tough challenge, and we need a lot of capacity building in terms of education, because for example, fishermen, our farmers, they don't really understand the concept of climate change or adaptation. But they do understand that they are heavily affected by typhoons, by La Nina, by the shortage of fish catch. So you see, there's a disconnect that we need international assistance on. So that's what we're trying to say when we say our 72% is conditional.
But then, as you said, a large part of that 75% is reliant on the support from developed countries. This is not to say, though, that the Philippines will just sit on its hands. You still have the remaining 2.71% that is unconditional. What's the plan there?
So for the unconditional part, that's mainly from the DOTR, so the transportation sector. It's only unconditional because we've already have a pipeline of projects. Like, for example, they have the EDSA Greenway project. So this would actually help solve the carbon emissions in EDSA. They also have the subway. And there are other sectors which are also transitioning on their own. On the Philippines part, it's not like we're not doing anything. A huge portion of our general appropriations actually go through disaster risk resiliency and climate change adaptation. But what we're trying to see now through the financing or climate finance is that even if we tag our budget, like how much of our budget actually goes to climate change and disaster risks, even if we put in place different strategies, like our disaster risk resilience strategies, our climate change adaptation strategies, it's still not enough. Because every year, even if we put in money towards these projects, another stronger typhoon hits us. And we need more money to recover from that typhoon. So instead of us moving forward, each year, the strength of typhoons becomes more immense and the effect in our economy becomes greater. So, you know, it's like fighting towards the ocean. Keep on trying to fight it, but, you know, it's just coming on and coming on. So what we're trying to do now is how do we channel international sources, capital, funding support, concessional loans, and other technical assistance to help us recover and build back better towards a more resilient Philippines?
Well, the plan as well is to buy all coal-fired power plants in Mindanao to shift most of the energy requirements there in the region to hydroelectric power. Why stop in Mindanao? Is this also going to be enough to cover the 2.71% unconditional target?
Okay, so the 2.71 are the existing projects. This is part of the 75%. Okay, so how we did the nationally determined contribution is we had a stakeholder engagement. And this was a process of a very, very long, rigorous economic-wide analysis. So we had to consult the different sectors. So you have the Department of Energy, the DENR, you have the Department of Agriculture, the Climate Change Commission, and the NEDA. So internationally now, a lot of countries are trying to speak up about the effects of climate. You have developed countries, and it's very good that President Joe Biden is taking up America's place in terms of climate change. However, these countries are more on mitigation and how do they transform their economy towards a resilient country. In our part, we don't even have energy security yet. So you can't really expect us to compete with them. So what we did was, the Department of Finance, together with the other agencies, we come up with an interagency task force to harmonize different government policies towards climate change. And one of this, or the center of this, is climate finance. So international financing companies and international multilateral banks, they all have what you call sustainable finance or green finance. So in terms of financing, they look into ESG standards or environmental, social, and governance standards. For us to channel these types of capital investments towards our economy, we need to show them that we're serious in trying to move towards renewables. And the first step is what the DOE did. Secretary Cusi declared a moratorium on coal. And the next step is how do we transition away from coal? So, you know, there are what you call stranded assets, which are the coal investments. Now, you can't just say you can't operate anymore because that also has economic repercussions. How do you solve the energy crisis that's going to happen if you shut down all coal power plants? And at the same time, these projects have financing agreements. So you can't just bankrupt them because you want to transition. So that is why the government will be buying these coal power plants in order to transition them and in order to usher them towards renewable energy. Mindanao is the pilot project because, you know, you have more areas and resources in that area, and you have less density and less businesses that would be affected if you transition it as compared to Metro Manila. So that's just the starting point. But, you know, we have a long way to go, and this is a challenge until 2030. And hopefully we could do it within the next few years. So it's one step at a time.
Okay, we're going to talk about that, your timeline, in a bit. But first, in Secretary Dominguez's speech, he said there are painful choices to be made. Mm-hmm. He continues to say that we must prepare our people to make them. What are these painful choices, Assistant Secretary?
Okay, like for example, in terms of who would be the first one to be affected in terms of transition. Right now, you have a holdback from jeepney drivers, for example. The DOTRA said, you know, just to transition them from Euro 2 to Euro 4 was very painful because as of now, they can't afford electronic vehicles, or there's a, you know, you need to help them or you need to recalibrate their skills for them to enter the digital era or the new normal. So that's quite painful because you really have to work with them hand in hand. And that's a long process. Aside from that, you need to help, for example, our fisher folks and our farmers adapt to climate smart agriculture. An issue that was raised by the DA is, although we've already started to produce climate resilient or typhoon resilient rice, farmers don't like how it tastes because it's different than the rice that we're used to. So these are changes, or these are things that we really have to work slowly for them to understand and adapt where we're coming from. Because when the climate crisis happens, which we're already seeing right now, it's mostly the most vulnerable that's first affected. And they're the ones last in terms of, you know, transitioning, because there's really a gap in terms of them understanding what's happening.
Okay. And finally, Assistant Secretary Alvarez, you know, let's face it, this administration only has a few months left in its term. How do you now set this agenda in stone so that the administrations that will come after it will move toward the same goal?
Okay, so that's a really good question as well. I think Secretary Dominguez addressed that yesterday or the other day in Sulong, Pilipinas, where he said, we'll try our best to do what we can to help the next administration or to give them what they're supposed to do. In terms of policies, we're trying to institutionalize, for example, the structure on how intergovernment agencies would work. Because previously, the Climate Change Commission is not was created by law, but it did not see how climate finance would be mainstreamed in the future. So it's a relatively old law, 10 years ago. So now what we're trying to do is we're trying to institutionalize how different government agencies should work together. And for example, the People's Survival Fund, it has a very low disbursement rate because there are bottlenecks that were not addressed. Like, for example, local government units do not really understand what adaptation means. So how do we fix the process so that they can better access the fund? How do they acquire, for example, data in terms of risk exposure? So we're going to put in place platforms and structures for the bureaucracy that we're going to leave behind to actually know how to function even without the current administration. So it's institutionalizing the process of how each one can understand how climate affects the Philippines. So.
All right, and we're going to have to leave it at that. Finance Assistant Secretary Paula Alvarez, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us today. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you very much, Carmina, and you too.
Thanks. We're going to take another break now. Still ahead, a LeBron James basketball card sells for a record-breaking price. We're going to tell you more about that when we come back. Stay with us here on Dateline Philippines.
Ma, kukunin namin ang Musi Bunso sa Liga.
Pero kailangan ng sporty attire. Mahal yun.
Akong bahala. Di kailangan gumastos ng mahal para makipagsabayan.
Kaso lang, madilaw.
Buti, may Surf with Active Clean na. Singgaling ng mamahalin. Magaling magpaputi, magtanggal kulog, at magpabango. 550 pa rin, pero kayang tumapat sa mamahalin. Basta wais, kayang makipagsabayan. Surf.
Boom, papaya, white rose papaya, yeah, yeah, yeah. Boom, puti ka, in 7 days, oh yeah, 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 yeah. White rose papaya.
White rose papaya. Na may double whitening, papaya extracts plus whitening ng vitamin B3. Clinically proven magpaputi in as early as 7 days.
Boom, puti ka, white rose papaya.
Papaya puti, papaya fast. White rose papaya.
Kahit sa ang sulok ng bahay, pwedeng kumapit ang coronavirus. Domex ang katapat nito. Proven na kayang patayin ang coronavirus in 60 seconds. Domex, unstoppable.
Tingnan nyo oh, puti ito.
Mas puti ito.
Mas puti ito. Mas puti ito. Mas puti ito.
Sa Pride Bar, pwedeng hindi na mag-bleach, tina o anyel. Dahil ang Pride Bar ay may power whitener na nanunood sa bawat hibla. Kaya ang gamit ay kislap puti at panayag pa sa kamay.
Mas puti ito, mas puti ito, mas puti ito.
Pride Bar, hindi lang puti, kislap puti.
ACS.
Ma'am, padeliver ka na agad.
Walang mabok. Araw, kahit matindi ang init mo, ito todo ko pa ang bangunan damit ko. Surf Bacon with Sunblue Technology para blooming ang bangunan damit under the init.
Blooming!
Surf Bacon, 5 pesos, SRP lang.
Araw-araw sa eskwela, nagkakasubukan ng galing. Gano'ng kagaling ang bat soup mo?
Ah! Uy, araw!
Amoy pawis!
Ang bango mo pa rin. Shield Bat Soap. May 24-hour germ protection. May shea butter pa, tulong para hindi mag-dry ang skin. At may malasakit sa budget, kaya recommended ng Philippine Nurses Association. I challenge you, subukan mong Shield. Shield, galit sa sakit, may malasakit.
ACS.
Ma, kukunin namin ang Musi Bunso sa Liga.
Pero kailangan ng sporty attire. Mahal yun.
Akong bahala. Di kailangan gumastos ng mahal para makipagsabayan.
Kaso lang, madilaw.
Buti, may Surf with Active Clean na. Singgaling ng mamahalin. Magaling magpaputi, magtanggal kulog, at magpabango. 550 pa rin, pero kayang tumapat sa mamahalin. Basta wais, kayang makipagsabayan. Surf!
And we're back with some sports action. The Milwaukee Bucks avoid a series sweep by defeating the Charlotte Hornets 114-104. The Hornets won their previous two meetings, but reigning two-time MVP Giannis Antetokounmpo wouldn't allow his Bucks to fall for a third time this season to Charlotte. The Greek Freak had 29 points, 12 rebounds, and 8 assists. Milwaukee remains in third spot in the Eastern Conference with a 38-23 record. LeBron James is indeed the NBA's king on and off the court. The four-time MVP rewrote record books when his rare basketball rookie card was sold privately. Forget this, $5.2 million. The sale broke the previous record of $4.6 million for a Luka Doncic card. Experts say there are still LeBron cards out there that could fetch up to $10 million. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines Podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.